Thank you, Holger, for the nice introduction, and thank you to all the organizers for inviting me. It's really an honor and a great pleasure to be here at the University of Constance for this Digital Societies Conference. Today, I'm going to talk about using digital traces for demographic research. I'm going to start this presentation with an image. This is a picture of a newspaper advertisement from the 1990s. It's an ad that was posted on, it's an advertisement for Radio Shack, which is a technology store in the US. Now, if you take a look at this advertisement, you'll see that there are a number of items or devices. You see a computer, you see a phone, you see a CD player, speakers, radios, voice recorders, and so on. And if you think of it for a minute, all these devices are now in our pockets. They're just like part of our phones. So over the course of the last couple of decades, we've seen a rapid transformation in information and communication technologies. This has had a profound impact on our lives and our well-being. And we typically refer to this process as digitalization or digitalization of life, which is something that many of you here are studying, and we saw several presentations. So together with these implications for our lives, with digitalization comes also transformations in the types of data or the types of industries that we see. For example, if we think of the advertisement industry, that has changed a lot. In the past, most of the advertisements were on paper. Now most of the ads are online and they are targeted. For example, if you want to create an ad yourself on Facebook, it's fairly easy. All you have to do is to go to this website, facebook.com/business, click on create an ad, and then at the next step, you'll be shown an interface that looks like this. Like for this specific example, I'm choosing to target people who live in the United States, in the age group 18 to 60, both genders, people who used to live in Mexico and now live in the United States, and who are also interested in bachata music. This is just an example. So if we ask Facebook for this target, then Facebook would tell us that there are about 1.1 million users that match this criteria. So these numbers are typically used by advertisers in order to make decisions about budgets. They may sort of narrow their audience or broaden it depending on the funding available. But these types of information can also be used by social scientists, as it's typically freely available, and it can be accessed via in a programmatic way via Facebook, via the Facebook advertisement platform. So we see that there are two main trends. One is digitalization and its implications for our lives, and the other one is new types of data that can be used. So this opens two main research questions. Like first, we want to understand how digitalization of life is affecting demographic and social processes, including health and well-being. And secondly, we want to be able to leverage these new types of data for demographic research. Now, for this talk, I'm going to focus on this second question. How can we use digital trace data for demographic research? But in a group at in Rostock, we're also working on the other question, and so I'd be happy to talk about that as well if there is interest. So for this talk in particular, I'm going to start by focusing on two examples. So I'll zoom in on two specific examples. The first one is a sort of core demographic question that is related to estimation. We want to be able to estimate the impact of natural disasters on migration and mobility. In particular, I'll show the context of Puerto Rico. The second example is more sociological in nature, and it's about assessing cultural assimilation of migrants, still using these types of digital trace data. Now, after going into these two examples, then I'll zoom out a little bit and I'll say a little bit more about various projects in digital demography at the Max Planck Institute for Demography Research in Rostock. All right, let's get started with the first example. Exactly 2 years ago, in September 2017, Hurricane Maria made landfall in Puerto Rico. with the destructive consequences that we're all aware of. So many people had to leave the island. Other people stayed despite the difficult conditions for a number of months. Government agencies struggled to support those who stayed and help those who left to either come back to their homes or to establish a new life elsewhere. Now, in this context, an important demographic question is related to estimating how many people left the island, how many people returned, what are the demographic characteristics of those who left, of those who returned, and so on. So these seem, at first, simple questions, but in fact, they're much harder. As a matter of fact, it turns out that it's impossible or very, very difficult to produce estimates with traditional data sources only. One of the reasons is that the most authoritative source of data in the United States for internal migration, the American Community Survey, is ill-suited for this type of questions. For example, the survey was scheduled to be in the field only several months after the hurricane, and by the time the data were collected, people had moved around or had returned, and so there's very little signal about the impact of the disaster on migration. So for a rapid response system, that data is not particularly suitable. So people have been looking at alternative data sources, including cell phone or flight passenger data, which give decent proxies about what happened, but they also lack demographic information and they have other types of problems. So what we proposed is to use Facebook data and to combine that with the American Community Survey in order to generate estimates of the impact of the hurricane on mobility and migration. And when I say we, I mean Monica Alexander from the University of Toronto, Kevan Polymis from the University of Washington, and myself. This is a collaborative project. So in terms of methods, let me give you a quick overview. We decided to use a difference in difference type of approach. The idea is that we look at percentage changes in immigrants in continental US from a number of countries and immigrants from the territory from Puerto Rico. And we look at relative changes over time with a difference in difference type of approach in order to evaluate relative frequency of migration. This is from Facebook data, the type of data that we saw for advertisers. And then we transform those percentages into population counts by combining those with baseline data from the American Community Survey. So to clarify, let me give you an example with a picture. So here we have a figure that shows the proportional change in Facebook users over time in continental US. The red line indicates immigrants from a number of countries who are in the US, whereas the blue line indicates Puerto Ricans in continental US. And so if you look at these two lines, they follow parallel trends up until October 2017. That's when that's right after the hurricane. And we see that there's a sort of split. At this point, the increase in Puerto Ricans is much larger than the increase for migrants from a number of countries. And so we used a difference in difference approach to estimate this relative change. So within this context, then, we applied this process to different states, and what we observe is that the states that received most Puerto Ricans include Florida, New York, and Pennsylvania. So from the Facebook data only, we got these percentage increases using a difference in difference approach, and then we applied those to baseline data from the American Community Survey before the hurricane, and we got some counts of people. So for example, our estimate is that about 60,000 people moved to Florida in the third month after the hurricane. That's about a third of the total number of people who moved from Puerto Rico to continental US in the third month after the hurricane. Now, since we kept collecting the data, we could also evaluate return migration for Puerto Ricans. And so we saw that starting from January, the number of people in Florida who are from Puerto Rico tended to decline by 7%. That's equivalent to 20,000 people who left Florida. Most of them went to Puerto Rico, some of them went to other states. But in general, we estimated that about between 20,000 and 30,000 people moved back to Puerto Rico between January and March 2018. And the people who moved out of Puerto Rico at the beginning tended to be typically younger, in the age group between late 20s and early mid 30s. So what have we learned from this type of exercise? So from a substantive point of view, we got some estimates, and we think that those are the most solid estimates that we can get at the moment by combining data. For example, we estimated about 180,000 people moved out of Puerto Rico in the aftermath of the hurricane. From a methodological point of view, we show that even though we have non-representative data, we can still say something useful with this data. And in particular, we may not be able to say everything from this data, but we can sort of leverage trends over time to evaluate relative differences over time and still extract meaningful information that can be then combined with traditional data. And finally, in terms of collaboration. So for this type of project, we relied mostly on data from the Facebook advertisement platform. So it was a nice collaboration between us in terms of like different skills and a combination of different type of approaches, but we didn't get the chance to work with Facebook. And I think that moving forward, it will become more and more important to work with companies. We will still be able to get some insights, but we could get even more insights if we could work with the companies that sort of produce the data and can give us more granular information. Okay, so that was about the first example. Now I want to move to a sort of more sociological example about cultural assimilation of immigrants using the same type of data. And here the question is, do immigrants assimilate to the mainstream culture of the host society? And if so, how? This is a joint work together with Ian Stewart, René Flores, Ingmar Weber, and Tim Reif. So what we want to do is to evaluate whether we can measure cultural taste by studying online behavior. In other words, we want to evaluate the extent to which preferences or interests of immigrants are similar or different to the ones of the host society. For this specific work, we focused on musical interest that we think of a marker of cultural identity. And so the goal here is to develop some metrics to evaluate distance in terms of interest for migrants and host population, also with respect to country of origin. So I'm going to go over a toy example, an oversimplified example, to give you a sense of what we were trying to do. So consider this oversimplified population in a destination region, say Americans in the US. And imagine that there existed only six musical genres: salsa, rock, pop, rap, mariachi, and cumbia, for example. From the Facebook advertisement platform, we can get audience estimates. So how many people are interested in salsa, rock, pop, and so on among Americans living in the US. Say that we get these numbers that are just made up for illustration. We can get the prevalence, so 30 divided by 100, 30% of Americans may be interested in salsa, 30% in rock, 20 in pop, and so on. We can do the same for a country of origin, say Mexicans in Mexico. We get different types of prevalences, we can calculate them, and we can then compare them. So we have the prevalence of, say, Americans in the US, Mexicans in Mexico. We have these two vectors. We can take the ratios for, for destination and origin. We see, for example, say salsa, we have 0.3 and 0.3. 0.3 divided by 0.3 is equal to 1, equal interest in Mexico and in the US. Rock, 0.3 in the US, 0.1 in Mexico, the ratio is 3. So rock is much more popular among Americans in the US than Mexicans in Mexico. And so we can sort of rank these ratios and then take the first, the top 50% as indicators of interest, of typical interest for the host society. So in this oversimplified example, rock, pop, and rap are very typical musical interests for Americans in the US. Salsa, mariachi, and cumbia are very typical of Mexicans in Mexico. Now, once we get this, we can then evaluate the interest among Mexican immigrants, but this, so Mexicans in the US. So earlier it was Americans in the US, Mexicans in Mexico. Now we can look at Mexicans in the US. And we can compare these prevalences and look at the ratios of these prevalences. Say the closer these values are to one, the more sort of Mexicans in the US have interests that are similar to Americans in the US. And then we can take the median of all these values across a number of musical genres as a sort of indicator of cultural assimilation or similarity in interest. So this was a sort of toy example. When we looked at the data, we actually did, we followed a similar approach for over 700 interests that were selected on the basis of having at least a worldwide audience of 100,000 users. So we found different things. I want to sort of point to what I think is the most interesting result for this work. These are two pseudo maps of the US. We did this analysis, we repeated this analysis for each state in the US. And in one case, for the map on the left-hand side, we compare Mexican immigrants with Anglos, with the white population in the US. Whereas for the right-hand side, we compare Mexican immigrants with African Americans. So there are two things that that emerge from these charts. Well, first of all, lighter color mean higher assimilation for these maps. We see that there is quite a bit of spatial heterogeneity. The things are a bit different across states. But most importantly, we see that the map on the right, on average, tends to be lighter, meaning that Mexican immigrants, at least in the context of musical interest expressed in Facebook, tend to be more similar to African Americans than to the white population. Now, we don't really know why this is happening. Perhaps they live in the same neighborhoods and they share similar interests. Perhaps there is something about musical genre that is appealing to both these communities, but not to whites. So we don't know that yet. For now, what we can show is that we observe this pattern, and perhaps this seems to indicate that assimilation, at least in this context, is a sort of segmented process rather than a linear type of process where immigrants become more and more similar to the host society. Now, as a next step, what we are trying to do now, and this is something that has been led by Andre Groh, who is a research scientist at the Max Planck Institute for Demographic Research, is to then run a survey. So far, we've used only data that Facebook gives us, and we take them, like data from the advertisement platform. But nothing prevents us to actually create an ad. So the idea is that we want to create an ad, target different people, and ask them questions. Like, we will give them maybe a gift card in order to participate in this survey. And so there are various purposes for that. Like, the first goal is to validate the data. Say, if we target Mexicans age 30 to 35 living in San Francisco, we can ask them some questions and verify whether they're really Mexicans age 30 to 35 living in San Francisco. And so this will give us some measure of plausibility, like, since what it will tell us whether we can trust Facebook data or not. And in addition, we can ask additional questions that we wouldn't be able to get from the Facebook advertisement platform only. For example, we don't have information on the time that people have spent in the country, so when they moved. But with these types of survey, we can ask these questions and additional questions. And so that's the goal moving forward. So we're going to start, so we're going to launch this survey soon, probably within a week or so. If you see an ad like that on Facebook, it means that there's something wrong. We're trying to target Mexicans in the US. But hopefully next time I see you or you see Andre Gros, we will have some results to share about this survey. Okay, so now I just want to sort of zoom out a little bit, and for the last couple of minutes, I just want to say a few things about the Lab of Digital and Computational Demography at the Max Planck Institute for Demographic Research. So in this lab that we established about a year ago, we are addressing general questions of societal relevance that include migration, population aging, climate change, and environmental dynamics. So what is unique about our lab is that we looked at these processes from the perspective of digitalization of life, including both implications of digitalization and applications of new types of data and their consequences for well-being of our populations and demographic dynamics. Today, what I did was to give you a couple of examples related to migration, but there are various other projects related to population aging or to environmental dynamics. And if you're interested, I certainly encourage you to go take a look at our website, demogar.mpg.de, where you can find the sort of most up-to-date information about the team, the publications, the projects, and so on. Now, I just want to end by saying that the lab is growing, so we're hiring. Everybody is hiring, so it's a good moment to be a social scientist. Exactly. And so if you know anybody who is interested, well, first you can talk to Thomas Hintz, who has priority, and then you can also mention that we have jobs in Rostock as well. The first set of deadlines is coming up on October 17, and I'd be happy to talk to anybody who wants to know more about what we're doing. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Emilio. I'm very impressed by what you gained from Facebook data for the usage of social sciences. Questions from the audience?
I have two questions on the Facebook data. First, how actually did you get them? And second, how about consent of the users?
So can you say it again? I understood how you get it, and then?
And how do you get consent from the users that you use the information about their musical taste?
Yeah, so the data is aggregate level data, so there's no sort of individual level data that we're using. And so anybody can sort of get this data for free by going to this web address, and then you will see a sort of interface like this. And so there are two ways of accessing the data. Like manually, it can be done this way. Like if you want to know how many people from Mexico interested in bachata music with these demographic characteristics live in the US, then you can sort of like get this number, 1.1 million users. But alternatively, and that's what we did, you can also access the data in a programmatic way. There's an API that allows you to, by writing a Python or an R script, to access the data. There are certain limits to the amount of data that you can access, but it's possible to sort of like collect the data over time. For this specific project for Puerto Rico, we started to collect this data a few years ago in order to study internal migration in the US. And so every time you collect the data, you only get something like a picture of what's happening now. But for the Puerto Rico data, we had started the collection months before. We didn't expect a hurricane to happen, and so we had the data available, and then we looked at the data afterwards. So the tricky part is that if you plan to sort of look at differences over time, you need to sort of start a collection at some point in time and then move forward in the future, whereas it's very difficult to go back in the past. And in terms of privacy, the lower bound for all these potential reach is 1,000. So it's the system is designed to prevent identification of users and to protect privacy as well. also when you use the API. Yeah.
Yeah, thank you for a very interesting talk. And let me just follow up on this to understand your approach. Because I was wondering how quickly this is updated by Facebook itself to make it useful for estimating this migration data. So is this based on live, let's say, IP? Do they use IP addresses of users or self-reported place of location?
So this is a great question. So we did ask Facebook, and they didn't tell us how they did it, but they did publish papers where they sort of explain things that they did. And so it turns out that, and then we compared like the results that they published with what we obtained from the advertisement platform, and we saw that they match. And so what we believe that they do is to use information that users self-report, like hometown and current city. Those are very important. Then they use information about geolocation, where people log in, and that's typically very important for them for advertisements, because if you go to Constance, then you can get some advertisements about restaurants in Constance, for example. And then a third measure that they use is related to network structure. So in order to be, say, a Vietnamese living in the US, you need to have at least a couple of friends, two or three friends in Vietnam and two or three friends in the US. And they do that mainly because they want to avoid sort of made up reports. So apparently for Vietnamese people, it's very cool to be living in Paris. And so if you only look at what people self-report, it will look like there are many people from Vietnam who live in Paris, but in fact it's not true. And you can sort of look at that from the geolocation. One thing that I wanted to point out about this was like how often they update. So we observe that like they update things fairly often, maybe on a weekly basis or so. But it's important to notice that there are a number of issues. So if you see, for example, in this context, there's this drop, and we're not sure whether this drop is related to seasonality or is just related to a slight change in the algorithm and or other types of approaches. And so I think that what is key for all these types of analysis is to include some sort of control groups. So that's why in this case, we had this control group. We saw that here there's a drop that is for both groups. Even if it's a change in an algorithm, the algorithm is affecting both groups. And so we're confident that we can correct for that. Whereas if we only had Puerto Ricans, for example, then we don't know whether the change is reflecting underlying population change or a change in algorithm.